This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson here in Wichita, Kansas, hosting a special edition of KMUW's Engage ICT Democracy on Tap. Today we're talking about women in politics. By a show of hands, how many of you believe that women are underrepresented in elected office? Quite a lot, pretty much everybody in the room. Understandable, the statistics would certainly bear that out. Women hold less than a quarter of the seats in Congress, just over a quarter of the nation's state legislative seats. Here in Kansas, it's 28%, though the state does have one of the nation's nine female governors, Laura Kelly, who is a Democrat. And Laura Kelly is a lot like many of the women elected at all levels of government in that she is a Democrat. Most of the elected women in this country are, most female voters are as well. And we want to dig into why that is, why the Republican Party has not had as much success as Democrats have had in electing women to office. And might that change in 2020 and beyond? We're here as part of our collaboration 1A Across America, and we're focused on hearing from you. We've teamed up with six stations, including KMUW, to stay tuned into what you're thinking when it comes to election issues. And tonight, we want to hear from Kansans about electing women to office. Joining us here on stage is Jennifer Basinger, the Vice President of Political Affairs for the Kansas Chamber of Commerce. She focuses on recruiting Republican women to run for office and supporting their campaigns. Jennifer, welcome to 1A.
Thanks for having me.
Next to Jennifer is Jim McLean, the Senior Political Reporter for the Kansas News Service. Jim, welcome. Next to Jim is Senator Barbara Beaulieu, a Democrat for District 7, which is in the Kansas City metro area. She was elected as a Republican and switched to the Democratic Party last fall. Senator Beaulieu, glad to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
And we also have Representative Christy Williams, a Republican representing District 77, which is just east of Wichita, where we are now. Representative Williams, welcome to the program. Let me begin with your stories, Senator Beaulieu and Representative Williams. Senator, you've been reelected a number of times over the last decade as a Republican. What made you decide to change parties?
Josh, I am about taking care of people. I'm a doctor, and I've always been about looking at issues and listening to patients, finding out what's wrong, finding out what we need to discuss, assessing the situation, and then moving forward and producing results. And when I realized that I couldn't accomplish those things as a Republican, and there were numerous things that went on that caused that, but when I found out that that voice of reason, that moderate thought process wasn't welcome, it was time to move. And I have been very welcomed into the Democratic Party.
How would you define your politics, Senator? Conservative, moderate, progressive? What terms would you use to describe yourself?
I have always described myself as a moderate, but I always let people know you have to look at each issue individually. So it's kind of like I'm a mutt. I'm an independent thought person. I always have stood up for my constituents, put person over party. So that, it depends on the issue, but moderate would be my definition.
Representative Williams, same question. How would you define your politics? Conservative, moderate, progressive, the issues that are most important to you, how would you describe yourself?
I would say that in the last 5 years in the legislature, having come from the city position as mayor and a teacher prior to that, and a mom of four, I've actually become more conservative during my time in the legislature for a whole host of reasons.
Now, before being elected to the House, you kind of alluded to this. You were the mayor of Augusta, Kansas,
yes.
The first woman to be mayor in that city's history. And I just want to be clear, Representative, you said that you've become more conservative as time has gone on. Do you think that that's in terms of a crystallization of the beliefs you already had, or did you find yourself actually being pulled further to the right on the political spectrum? Could you just clarify that a bit?
I think that everybody, when they step into politics, it's a little bit different when you have to push that button, which is red for no or green for yes, and you have to make that decision, and you have to consider the voters that you serve and make sure you're reflecting the value set that you're honoring that community. So that's number one. But number two, I think that I did have a set of values that put family as priority, that believes that the individual is empowered when we give them space to achieve. And the more I saw programs, expansions, more government, more money, but I didn't see with requests for more money, let's just say for education, I didn't hear, well, this is how we're going to improve success. If I could see some results, I want the dollars to move in that direction. If it's criminal justice reform and we want a lower recidivism rates, I want to do that. That is well in invested taxes. But what I saw was that we were putting more money and more money into program after program, watching caseloads go up, test scores go down, and we weren't seeing the results. We weren't seeing the accountability. And we saw it across the spectrum in the private sector with economic development incentives to the public sector. And I just said, enough. Let's empower individuals to make good decisions, get out of their way, and allow businesses and families to make decisions that are best for them.
And could I respond?
Please.
I said, I think it's fascinating that this idea of conservatism is about family. I truly value family, and I consider that a moderate position. So I'm a little confused, honestly. And I also wanted to address this issue of, I totally agree that I think people should be able to make their own decisions, and that's why I support things like women having access to contraception. I think they should have that choice. So I'm struggling to understand where that is, that conservative versus moderate.
I do want to get more into some of the specific issues in just a minute. But first, Jim McLean, can we zoom out just a little bit for the benefit of people around the country who are not so steeped in Kansas politics? Can you just give us the 30,000-foot view of the landscape for women in politics here in Kansas?
Happy to. Listen, Kansas, for many, many, many decades, was considered nationally as kind of a bellwether state and was considered, you know, a rock-solid Republican state, yet it was very progressive and led the way historically in regard to suffrage and a lot of issues like that. And you know, we look back at Nancy Kassebaum, who was the United States Senator, when there weren't that many women in the U.S. Senate. And so Kansas has always, I think, been at the forefront of that. The same trends that we're seeing nationwide, the widening gender and the widening education gap, are pronounced here in Kansas, but not across the board. Joshua, that's what you need to understand about Kansas. Laura Kelly won the governor's race by carrying 10 counties out of 105, okay? And because Kansas, like many plain states, there are huge expanses of rural Kansas that are literally emptying out, and they're losing political power as that happens. And so Governor Kelly won Johnson County, which is the Kansas City suburbs, won the university communities in the state, and carried Sedgwick County down here, which is, again, the state's largest city. And that was enough then to propel her into the governor's office. And so I think what we're seeing here in Kansas is what we're seeing nationwide, the gender gap, the education gap. And as you said at the top of the show, women are highly valued in the Democratic Party politically. There's actually a benefit to being a woman when you put yourself on the ballot in a Democratic primary, contrary to what happens oftentimes in the Republican primary, where women sometimes have to run against, in a technical political term, run against their gender to be successful. So that's the dynamic we see happening here, maybe a little less pronounced than in some urban areas across the country, but still present.
That's a good place to bring in Jennifer Basinger in terms of your efforts to get more Republican women involved in politics. How do you see the problem in the first place? Why there aren't more Republican women running for office? Are there a few places where you try to attack the problem most acutely, or is it more diffuse than that?
Well, I think it's important to, first of all, say, generally speaking, and I hate to say that, but I'm going to say it anyway, conservatives, especially Republicans in general, don't really buy into the whole identity politics thing. So we just want the best candidate. When I go out and recruit in a particular district, I want the candidate who's going to win. I don't care if it's a woman or a man. Now, sometimes the data will drive me toward the woman, and it will make sense for whatever reason in a particular district to recruit a woman. But at the end of the day, I just don't care if it's a man or a woman. And I think that's what you'll hear from my fellow Republicans as well.
Talk about some of the things that you do to try and recruit women to run, to get them elected, particularly when you run across a woman who you think could be a good candidate, but maybe she's not sure if it's for her.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of times you'll see women come up through the grassroots in Kansas. They will find it comfortable to start by volunteering for someone's campaign. And then maybe they'll move into a leadership role at a local organization. I think getting them comfortable with the process is part of it. Because, again, Christy alluded to this earlier, sometimes in conservative circles especially, it's the traditional roles. Mom stays home, and on the Democratic side, we see government is sometimes the answer, or government programs are the answer, and so serving in public office is much more accepted and even encouraged than we would see on the Republican side for some folks, especially those super conservative, traditional rural folks. So helping them get past that and saying, it's good, it's okay, come be a voice for the other soccer moms in your community or the ladies at your church or whatever.
That was Jennifer Basinger with the Kansas Chamber of Commerce. You're listening to highlights of a conversation we recorded this month in Wichita as part of our 1A Across America collaboration with KMUW. The share of women voters who lean Democratic rose to an all-time high in 2017, 56%, according to Pew Research. That gap is even wider when it comes to millennials. Does the Republican Party have a plan to change that? We'll hear more in a moment from our conversation recorded in historically red Kansas. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. Today we're hearing highlights from a conversation we had this month in Wichita, Kansas. We hosted a live panel in collaboration with member station KMUW as part of our series 1A Across America. We're going to neighborhoods far from D.C. and talking to people about what they care about this election cycle. In Kansas, we focused on women in politics, particularly in the GOP. The state has a newly elected female governor, a Democrat. Three women are running for the open U.S. Senate seat in Kansas, Republican State Senate President Susan Weigel, and two Democrats, local city council member Usha Reddy and State Senator Barbara Beaulieu. Senator Beaulieu joined us on stage in Wichita, as did State Representative Christy Williams. She's a Republican representing a district just east of Wichita. We were also joined by Jennifer Basinger, the Vice President of Political Affairs for the Kansas Chamber of Commerce, and Jim McLean, the senior political reporter for the Kansas News Service. Today we're hearing highlights of our conversation. You can watch a video of the whole event at the1a.org. Let's jump back in with a question from a listener. Adrienne wrote on our Facebook page, currently the GOP female representation dropped dramatically during the midterms. How do they want the GOP to better support them? How do Republican candidates plan on winning back the women, especially millennials, who are leaving the party? Let's break that question into a few pieces, Representative Williams. First of all, thoughts on how the Republican Party might better support you, if you agree that they do need to support you better at all. How do you see it?
I think that there's absolutely room for improvement. I think women have a tough position because they are generally the ones that want to be the nurturers of the kids. I have four, and it's very hard to take a position like running to Topeka, which is 2 hours away, and maintaining that balance in your life. But supporting us would be that oftentimes women have to balance being a likable leader more than men do, and it's more difficult. Whether you're on the right or the left, to maintain that likability and that strong leadership. And so the Republican Party could do a great service to myself and other Republican women by remembering that it's okay to give us an extra encouragement, support, whatever it may be. And though I agree with Jennifer, we want the best person to run for that office, I also would say that women's voice is a little bit different. And at the state house, having just a little bit more than 27-28% would be a good thing, because we bring a different perspective to the state house, and we're great multitaskers.
Can you elaborate on that a bit? I'm glad you brought that up, Representative Williams, in terms of women having to deal more with likability. That makes me crazy sometimes talking politics, because you don't hear male candidates have to. I mean, it's like, you could buy a beer with him is as far as it goes. Women have to answer this question way more, and it's weird for me, but for you as a candidate, how do you see that from the inside? Like, where does that come from?
I just want to tell you that for the most part, we don't think about it. We just live, we do our lives. We're at peace with the world as it is because, you know, we like being women, right? But I will say we get it on both sides. I keep saying as a mom, there are those that think, why are you doing that? Why would you leave them to do that? And then there's the other side that, you know what, maybe you are too confident. Maybe you're too aggressive. Maybe you should let somebody else handle that issue. And I think that studies and polling does indicate that men can get a more favorable rating without having the experience. Women do have to, according to surveys, work a little bit harder and have a little bit better background than the guys often do. And I don't let that wear me down, but it does happen. So
interesting you brought that up. Melanie writes, I am a strong, smart, caring person. I'd be a great leader, or more specifically, an elected official. But I am a passionate woman. I show my feelings, and this renders me unelectable in Kansas. A male version of me would be mayor in a heartbeat. Senator Beaulieu. Senator, is there anything that the GOP might have done to keep you in its ranks? Was there anything that they could have reached out to you with, addressed for you, or was your mind kind of made up once the decision was made?
I grew up a moderate Republican. Nancy Kassebaum was my hero and continues to be. And Nancy Kassebaum was the first woman elected in her own right to the U.S. Senate and was from Kansas. She was my mother's college friend, and I grew up watching other women work diligently to get a woman elected to the U.S. Senate, and I am proud to be able to be from that state. What could the GOP have done differently over time? Let's start with giving me support. When I endorsed across party lines, a statement was made from the Republican Party, we're never going to give her another cent. They never gave me a single cent. Now, it's interesting to hear from you that you're trying to support from the Republican Party the woman who would be the best candidate. That was not true in my district and in my experience. So maybe, hopefully, that will change, because that is what it takes. It takes recognizing what women are advocating for, and especially the not being partisan. And both parties can be that way. I'm not going to say anyone isn't, but at least in the Kansas situation for me, it's been much more supportive for me as a woman, me as just a person in office representing my constituents.
Jim?
Barbara Beaulieu here. Senator Beaulieu here is a perfect example of some of the dynamics that are occurring. Johnson County, Kansas City suburbs, right? And Johnson County is the economic engine of the state, most populous county in the state, and for many, many years, decades, it was controlled by moderate Republicans. And that has changed fairly substantially. And like all kinds of changes, it builds gradually, and then when it happens, it really happens, right? And so moderate Republicans really had controlled Johnson County for a very long time, as I said. But the point I'm trying to make is I think Barbara really put herself in a better position politically by changing parties than had she continued to try to persevere as a moderate Republican in Johnson County. And one other thing to say about that, the three women who are running in the Republican primary in the 3rd Congressional District, which is essentially Johnson and Wyandotte County, all women. Challenging Sharice Davids, the Democrat who took a seat from a Republican, Kevin Yoder, a couple of years ago.
I want to get to the other part of Adrienne's question, Jennifer, and I'd like you to answer this. In terms of the strategy for millennials who may be leaving the GOP, is there a strategy to try to bring them back, and what does that look like?
I'm so glad that you asked that specific question. I sat in a conference recently where Kristen Soltis Anderson spoke, and she shared some polling from Echelon Insights and talked about that very specific thing. Sometimes we hear that millennials prefer socialism over capitalism. And that we just find that shocking that that could be. And so she talked about what happens when they really break down what those different things mean, what socialism really means and what capitalism really means. And at the end of the day, that's not necessarily the case. They do believe in many of those same core values that we on the Republican side believe in, but they're not going to bend on a few things like income inequality and health care. And so, again, we have to have conversations. We can't just assume we've lost an entire segment of the population. We've got to go where they're at, talk to them, have conversation, embrace them and get to know them, and listen, Barbara, right, like you said, listen.
I think if there's one thing I've noticed, Jennifer, that you know, we've covered CPAC for 2 years in a row now, and at both events, the vast majority of people at CPAC are in their, like, 20s. Right. They're college students, right, because there's a real concerted effort, particularly, well, not exclusively, but I noticed that in, like, the very, like, beating heart of conservative politics in D.C., there is a recognition that millennials have got to be a priority for the party, especially millennial women. So what you're saying from our reporting is not unique.
No, not at all. And millennial voters are turning out. They are absolutely going to turn out. And if we ignore them, if we just give up on them and assume we know what they're thinking and how they're going to vote, that's on us.
Jim?
Well, I was just curious. I was really intrigued by something I just heard Jennifer say. We ignore millennials at our peril. Obviously, the demographics are such you can't if you want to stay competitive, right, long term. So what I'm really curious about is what changes in party orthodoxy do you think it will take to get millennials to come on board with the Republican Party? Because right now they are choosing, and the data shows they're choosing one side versus the other. So I'm just curious, does the party have to change in order to make that happen?
So I have been a delegate at the state level a few different times over the years to the Republican Party, and I have sat through those meetings where we have had the discussion as to whether or not we're going to change the platform. Good grief. There's no alcohol at these events, but there should be, because it just goes on and on and on. And there have been times where we have made a change. For instance, the death penalty was part of the Republican Party platform, a pro-death penalty stance. Through the efforts of myself included and some others, we were able to pull that out of the Republican Party platform. That was a huge deal. But to see that little change, it felt huge to me. But to many, it was, it's a life issue or it's a cost issue, or, you know, we can let that go and fight about other things. Things like that change, you'll never see the big things change. So we'll have to find those things where we can find common ground, make little changes as we go along, but it's about those conversations and really making sure we're on the same page.
Olivia is here at the mic. Olivia, what's on your mind?
Yeah, so we've already addressed millennials, but millennials are 100% within voting age. And we're coming up on Gen Z being the newest growing population of voters. I'm 21 and I am Gen Z, and I'm about to graduate college and head into the workforce. And so Gen Z grew up during the recession and is showing an even stronger interest in this socialism that we've discussed before, and in income inequality specifically. They're also a large part of this new rise of young people's political engagement. So have conversations begun about how to bring them into the GOP and how to bring them into either party, really?
Before I let Representative Williams, if you wouldn't mind responding to that, what have you seen, Olivia? Do you feel like you're being engaged with, spoken to, or maybe spoken down to? What have you encountered?
I think that a lot of the conversation just hasn't included Generation Z yet. I think that there's so much discussion about millennials, and we've talked about how millennials are this new thing that people are talking about when they probably should have been talked about for a long time. And Generation Z is this large group of people. When you look at the March for Our Lives, is a large group of Generation Z coming forward who will be voting.
Since we're speaking about women in politics and the GOP, Gen Z women, how do you see, and I'm not asking you to speak for every Gen Z woman in the country, but in your circle among the people you know, how do the women your age view Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, Independents? Like, do those parties matter? Do they have good reputations, bad reputations, no reputations?
I think that it's kind of an interesting thing because we are growing up in this time when things are so partisan and so split that I think that there's not very many people in Generation Z who are in the middle.
Okay. Olivia, thank you for sharing that. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A. Representative Williams, what would you say to Olivia?
I would love to, Olivia. This is such a fun topic for me because I'm a mom of two Gen Z women, and they both can vote. One's 18 and one's 21, both of them at the University of Kansas, and two, a son and a daughter that are also Gen Z, I guess. I didn't know what that was for sure. But but let me tell you what, our house is kind of an interesting place to be because I'm more conservative and my husband's just a little bit more moderate than I am. So our kids, we debate. We talk about the issues. We talk about the people. We talk about President Trump. We talk about things that happen in the State House, and they get a front hand opportunity to be part of that discussion. And we really encourage them to get into the parades, to learn about it. And two of our kids were involved in debate. Whenever I have an opportunity to go to one of my schools and talk to a government class, I get super excited. And I have to admit that I really try to pick on the girls, trying to encourage them to find themselves and to have their voice, because I think that's pretty darn important. But can I say that it's really important for Gen Z to have ears for both? Because once you start paying taxes and once you start seeing what's happening behind the scenes, sometimes your views may shift. Because in the reality, when I was in college, I was all about how can you make my college tuition cheaper? And, you know, these things that I didn't realize, somebody does have to pay for that. So let's be honest about the conversation and realize that no matter what we get into, whether it's healthcare or education, there is a cost. Nothing is free. And as long as there is an honest debate and Gen Z have an opportunity to discuss.
Senator?
What I would add is that pay attention to who listens to you and is hearing you. I heard you mention March for Our Lives. I was there. And one of the reasons that I have been pulled much more and into the Democratic side of things is because we're willing to talk and listen to people saying we're tired of gun violence. I'm hearing that. And so what it is that matters to you is going to change. You just over time, my needs are changing. I'm getting older. I'm looking at Medicare, ultimately. And, you know, it makes a difference what's in front of you in your life. But for a political group, you need to associate with somebody. And it may be no party, but you being together in collective to get to the votes that you need, as Christy said earlier, pushing red or green, it takes a certain number, 51%, 50%. You've got to have the majority to get something moved through. So when you associate with a group, the quickest way to get there is with two groups, and one of them will win. So finding out who will listen to what it is that you need and you want move forward and joining with them, who will listen to you, is where I would suggest you go.
Brooke is at the mic. Brooke, what's on your mind?
I'm a little bit nervous, honestly. I think that as a woman and as a millennial, it's a little bit hard to get up here and to voice my opinion. I feel often that it's not heard, so I'm glad to be here. It seems that there is constantly a box that people are putting us into, specifically my two groups, a woman and a millennial. It seems like Democrats are constantly saying they want, you know, you to be a strong, independent woman, a working mom, pro-LGBTQ, and Republicans are constantly saying, be a mom, be a stay-at-home mom, be a wife, and be anti-gay or whatever. What if we're not leaning towards a side? What if we constantly feel like we're picking the lesser of two evils and we don't want to? What if we don't want this evil or that evil? What if we want someone who actually represents us? And I get tired of just the petty arguments, that the fact is that we constantly argue over the same topics and they're just so far away from each other. Like, how can we find a middle ground? How can we support something that isn't on polar right or polar left?
We are hearing highlights of a conversation we recorded this month in Wichita. Now, President Trump won all but two counties in Kansas back in 2016. How has his presidency affected his popularity in this state, especially with women? And what might that mean for 2020? We'll get to that ahead. Stay close. Back now to highlights from our conversation in Wichita, Kansas about women in politics. It's part of our 1A Across America collaboration with member station KMUW. We spoke with Democratic State Senator Barbara Beaulieu, Republican State Rep Christy Williams, Republican strategist Jennifer Basinger, and Jim McLean, the senior political reporter for the Kansas News Service. Let's pick up with a question from Julie in the audience.
My question is specifically for Representative Williams. What do the women who want to be politically active, who don't have an interest in family, you know, either party, where is that space for them? It's not personally me, but I have women in my life, and I think we're going to continue to go that way. You know, somebody brought up identity politics, and to me it kind of feels a little bit like that's what that is, especially moving forward.
Representative, what would you say?
I find that really interesting. And when I gave my example of why I became more conservative and I used the family as part of it, Senator Beaulieu didn't really like that because we all love our families, right? Or we should, and they're priority. So that would, my comments about my personal experience should not detract from the senator's personal experience or anyone else's. Rather, whether or not you choose a family, I would say that is not relevant to a Republican or a Democrat. We would love and embrace all women. The differences falls on where the views are, let's say, on healthcare or taxes or education or infrastructure or social service funding and all of those items. That's where the breakdown actually occurs. But in terms of the single woman, the businesswoman, the woman that's trying to make it on her own, I think the Republican Party is the best place for you because we are here to make a difference, to free you up, to reduce those regulations, to give you the freedom. And that's what we have to offer. We want to empower you to be the person that you're supposed to be. And I am not just a mom. I am a woman also, and a wife.
Representative Williams, if I could just follow on that, and then, Senator, I'll let you answer. I think one of the other issues in terms of dealing with family is that there are many kinds of families. And I know a lot of millennials who may have a family that is comprised of two women, or like me, a family that is comprised of two men, who feel like the GOP doesn't respect their family or share their values. What would you say to them?
From a personal perspective, I would say that the GOP, your church, your neighborhood, any community that doesn't welcome you, regardless of your particular values, that's not healthy. That does not mean that you have to agree. And I think that what's happening in U.S., Kansas, we're getting to a place where we are so partisan, so polar, that we're not okay if we disagree. Why can we not be respectful and make sure that all of your rights are maintained, but differ on the way that we view the world? Because in reality, we will. But if we cannot respect, then we are not doing a good job. And the GOP, as well as any party or organization, can do better. And I hope that we will.
Senator Beaulieu?
What I would add, I mean, when asked, was there a straw that broke the camel's back? When the GOP put in their platform that God only made male and female, and we must work to eliminate transgender, my heart broke, and I was done.
So that was the final straw. Or that was the beginning of the...
That day, it hurt so much. And listening when gay marriage was approved and supported in the Supreme Court level, and I remember Republican colleagues saying, this is the end of civilization as we know it. And so those kinds of messages that were coming from my GOP colleagues hurt and took me to a place of I respect what you have to say, that we should be able to love one another, but I think we should all be able to and all have the same rights and all be able to participate in society equally. And when someone's putting a message in their platform that says, you can't be, I have a problem with that.
Before we keep going, Jennifer, I want to give you a chance to respond to that, partly because in terms of these social issues on which I think more and more, particularly young people, particularly women, as women have had to, through various waves of feminism, deal with cis women and trans women and so on, as that has progressed and doesn't seem to be going back, how does the party deal with that? It seems to be a social trend that's moving in one direction.
I think we have to remember that right here in Sedgwick County, the chairman of our GOP is gay. So the fact that we don't embrace or show respect to is simply not true. But you're right about the party piece. I think the platform piece. I think the other thing that's important to remember, a good chunk of the GOP is maybe not actively involved, but they are a little L libertarian, and they don't give two flips about somebody's sexuality. That is not reflected in the platform. But if you have conversations with so many folks in the GOP, they just like people. They don't care about what's going on behind closed doors.
Let me zoom out just a little bit and talk nationally as well. I'm glad we were able to start by focusing on Kansas. We had the question about how Washington is affecting Kansas. Jim, let me start with you, although I'd like everybody's perspective on this, on the impact of the Trump administration, the shift of the Republican Party, at least inside the Beltway in D.C., kind of coalescing around him, pulling the party, some would argue, further to the right. Certainly others would argue kind of putting fear in lawmakers for fear of opposing him. Jim, how have you seen that play out in Kansas? I'd love to hear everybody's perspectives on that, but Jim, let me start with you.
Well, it's interesting because I'm not sure exactly how it's playing out other than anecdotal conversations. I mean, it's all anything. Anybody who's interested in politics, it's what they're talking about. I'm not sure President Trump is pulling the party to the right. I think he's pulling it into a completely new direction. You know, I'm not even sure it's ideologically based. But that aside, I don't say that to get it's not a laugh line. I just think it's demonstrably true. I mean, he's just not an orthodox political figure. But it's interesting, I think, to watch the state's congressional delegation. Pretty much the House delegation, aside from Sharice Davids, the Democrat in the 3rd District, have just been in lockstep with the president and defending him at every turn. I think it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in 2020, whether anybody will benefit from that or pay a price for that. Kansas, of course, went pretty heavily for President Trump. But again, I would really like to go to some of those districts across the state where the vote for President Trump was the heaviest and just have some conversations with people to see how they react to that. I honestly don't know at this point.
Jennifer?
So as I go out and recruit candidates and talk to women, it's like there's the thought that we must hate President Trump because we're women and look at all of the horrible and awful things that he said or fill in the blank. But Republican women don't really appreciate being forced into a box and being told you must hate President Trump. I think we look at least I do, from a logic perspective, less from the emotional side, and part of that's just my makeup, but I look at my investment portfolio. My teenage son has found a job. Wages are up. The embassy was moved to Jerusalem. Abortion rates are at an all-time low. Crime is plummeting, and I don't look at Twitter. And, overall, I'm just pretty dang happy. So what I find when I go out and talk to a lot of these women as I'm recruiting, especially in relationship to the president, they're not always looking at it from that emotional side and all of the drama that comes with Twitter. They're looking at policy.
Would you still feel that way if you did look more at Twitter?
How would I know?
Well, but I'm saying, I mean, there are quite a few Republicans who have said they've had to hold their nose and throw their phone in the toilet not to look at what the president has tweeted to maintain that support.
Some of that comes from our interest, too, in Supreme Court justices and other elements that factor into that. But speaking about myself personally and other women that I do speak to that aren't super emotional about the whole thing, and we truly do look at it from a logical, fact-based stance, I don't really I hate to say this because it's going to be taken out of context, but all of the tweets and the emotion and the drama, it doesn't matter to me as much as him accomplishing what he said he was going to do, and he's done that.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. You're focusing more on kind of the policy agenda and what's gotten done in the administration.
The tweets aside, I mean, a lot of, and I use this term advisedly, but a lot of apologists for the president always refer to the tweet like tweets saying, well, what are you going to do, right? What I'm interested, everybody up at this table is interested in politics, in government, and in institutions functioning properly. Whether you're a conservative or a moderate or a liberal, you want these institutions that we value to function. The question I would have for people who say, you know, that Trump has delivered results in terms of the economy is, what about the damage being done to institutions in this country that need to survive past this presidency?
To Representative Williams by way of answering that.
And maybe I'm thin-skinned because I'm a journalist, but I don't appreciate being denigrated, you know, and being assumptions being made about, you know, my level of professionalism.
I just don't think it was a surprise.
Let me let the representative get to that one, and I would add to that also the idea, you know, you'll before the election and during the election, progressives and Democrats were asking women across the country, how can you vote for a guy who said that by dint of his wealth and his power that he had permission to grab women in their private parts? How can he get your vote? How do you see the impact? How do you see the impact of President Trump on the party, particularly in Kansas, including just some of the vile things that he said about women?
All right, so I think that for me, for being a Republican and where my vote goes, number one, the most important thing is that the freedom and opportunity is passed on generation after generation, and that is supreme. With that also is life. That matters to me. That's something that I value. And so when I choose a person that I'm going to vote for, it's going to be someone that preserves life. And that is very, very important. Now, on the honesty issue, I'm not going to defend our president on many of the things that he's done. I think that they're despicable, and those are discussions we've had with our kids in our home. But when I had to make a choice about freedom and opportunity and the cost of what the promises are. And when I say promises, we cannot tell a new generation that are coming up that everything is free, that you can have free healthcare, you can have free college tuition, you can have your loans forgiven, that you should have the same pay as somebody else. That to me is not freedom when you have to buy or promise things that somebody has the power to go get themselves. And I believe that that is the most important. So that's why I choose to vote the way that I do. And that precedes some of the other issues.
I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A. We're winding down, but I do want to hear from the senator and the representative. And if you would just speak to women who may be listening to this in other parts of the country, who might be thinking about running for office regardless of their party or no party, who are thinking about it regardless of what their reasons are for getting in the race, for possibly not getting in the race, their personal factors, their politics. What do you wish more women understood about running for office and being in office that might help them make that decision in terms of whether to throw their hat in the ring? Senator?
I love this question. Thank you. Because for whatever reason, women always are putting this list together in their head about, well, do I know enough? Can I do this right? Can I do whatever? And all they have these lists, and maybe that's because that's how we run our households, and we've got to do everything. We're the ones that take charge. But ultimately, a man goes, gosh, I want to be a senator. I think I'll run. And they go do it. And so encouraging women to know that they have every ability that anybody else has, and that come and visit, because you'll find out maybe you even know more than many of us. And that's the whole point of a citizen legislature. We don't want everybody to be the same. We want a wide variety of ages and sexes and educations and whatever, so that we represent the people and can do what they need. So women, go for it, and we're here to support you, and believe in yourselves, because you are good enough. In fact, you might be even better.
And Representative, I'll give you the last word.
What I would tell women is that just find something that you can concentrate on. You cannot fix everything. Have you ever seen someone that had five jobs or volunteered at every organization? You cannot do or be effective if you try to be all things to all people. Find the thing that you're passionate about, the last speaker. Find some issue that you care about and really try to move mountains in that issue. Be the expert in that issue, whatever that may be. Stay in that wheelhouse. Don't jump around to another really awesome big issue. Maybe let somebody else carry that torch. The other thing I would say to women is I hope you develop the thick skin, because you will be criticized and you will be misunderstood. Because remember, as we even have this conversation, it's more one-sided than it is two-sided. You get to hear us, you get to ask a few questions, but you can't really know what's our motive, what's our heart, what's our thinking, what have we done, what do we want to do. In the few minutes that we have to respond, we can only give you a tiny taste of what our vision is or what we care about. So if at any point myself or anyone here came off in a way that seems unauthentic or uncaring, I can speak for myself. That is not intended, and I hope I'd have the opportunity to get to know you at a later time. Thank you.
We have had some fantastic engagement. Thanks to Representative Christy Williams, a Republican representing District 77 east of Wichita. Representative Williams, thank you for being with us.
Yeah.
Senator Barbara Beaulieu, a Democrat in District 7 in the Kansas City metro area. Thank you, Senator. Jim McLean, the senior political reporter for the Kansas News Service. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you. Fine.
And Jennifer Basinger, vice president of political affairs for the Kansas Chamber of Commerce. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you.
This conversation was produced by 1A's Amanda Williams and KMUW's Sarah Jane Crespo and Haley Krausen. Special thanks to KMUW staff. 1A Across America is funded in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.